consideration. Under the Contract Act, consideration is something done at the promisor's request, where the promisee may act or abstain from acting, which means that what they are trying to say is that something done at the promisor's request, which means the promisor has said that if you do XYZ as an activity, then, or you do not do an XYZ activity, then you stand to gain something. What is types of consideration? Past. The promisee has already acted before the agreement, which means that you pay, you have made some payment or something, and then you say, okay, I have made the payment, now please do this, which is a past consideration. Present, executed. The promisee provides consideration simultaneously with the contract. Okay, you sign this, and this is the amount for the signing the contract. But you need to, of course, which means going ahead, accept all the terms and conditions. Future, the action or promise is to occur at a future date, which means that we will say that somebody promises to do something for you at a later point of time. Let's say after the results are declared, he would do some activity. That would be an action or promise that would occur at a future date. Essentials of a valid consideration. Desire of the promisor must be requested by the promisor. Voluntary acts aren't valid, which means that the promisor must have requested it. It is not a question where I have done it, so then you tell the promisor, now please accept it. From promisee or others, consideration can come from someone other than the promisee, which means that the action can be done by somebody else also on behalf of the promisee. The consideration must be lawful, must not be illegal, immoral, or cause harm. The action that is required to be done or has been done should be legal, moral, and should not be causing harm to anybody. The consideration must be real and possible, must be capable of being performed and morally acceptable. We took that example of lifting weight. Now, if that weight is abnormally high, then nobody would be capable of actually performing that action. Of course, let's say if there is a condition, hypothetically, somebody says that if you kill somebody, only then do you get an amount. Now, that would not be morally accepted, not be accepted legally too. The consideration may not be adequate. The value of consideration doesn't need to be equal. What they are trying to say is that there has to be a reasonable consideration, value of consideration, that needs to be looked at. It cannot be lopsided, which means that the consideration cannot be very high and the compensation or the gain that you are offering is too low, and the other way around. Importance of consideration in a contract. Consideration is crucial for a valid contract, creating obligations for both parties. Without it, the contract can't be completed. Contracts without consideration, natural love and affection, valid if in writing and between close relatives. Voluntary services, valid if done in gratitude with intent to compensate, can be oral or written. Let's understand this. Consideration is crucial for a valid contract, creating obligations for both parties. Without it, the contract can't be completed, which means that if you want the contract to be enforceable by law, you need to have a consideration and has to be accepted which creates an obligation for both the parties. Contracts without consideration. Natural love and affection, valid if in writing and between close relatives. So father promises his son that he will take care of his education, whatever is the cost. Now this, if it is valid in writing, then even in spite of the fact that they are close relatives, there is a validity there. Voluntary services, valid if done in gratitude with intent to compensate, can be oral or written. Somebody helps you out at your house for the household work. Now if what is happening here, valid if done in gratitude, that person says that no, I will not accept any amount, but you have already done enough for me in the past, with an intent to compensate, can be oral or written. And as a result of that work that they are doing now, it is in gratitude for what you have done earlier, which means you have already compensated or you intend to compensate it in future. This can be oral or written. You need not have an actual document, or maybe if you have a document, fine, it doesn't matter. Elements of a contract: offer, a clear proposal expressing willingness to contract on specific terms. What does this mean? A clear proposal expressing willingness to contract on specific terms. That is how you would define an offer, which is an element of a contract. Acceptance, unambiguous agreement to the offer, creating mutual consent, which means that the offer is made, you don't further put up in some more conditions before you accept that offer. Consideration, exchange of something valuable between parties. So which means that you are exchanging something, and consideration is a requirement for a contract. Capacity, legal ability to understand and enter into a contract. Age, mental soundness, etc., all the terms conditions for the contract. Intent, genuine intention of the parties to be bound by the contract's term. That means that both of you agree mutually without any enforcing pressure that you must sign the contract. There is a genuine intention of the parties to be bound by the contract's term. Contracts, legality. The purpose and subject matter must be lawful, complying with applicable laws and not violating public policy. As I said, on the lighter side, this cannot be about hiring a person to get rid of another. Definitely, that contract would not be legal, and it cannot be, it is not lawful, it doesn't comply with the laws of the country and is violating public policy. But a contract made for employment or a contract made for getting a job done in terms of physical movement or repair work or something like that is definitely lawful. Of course, again, you are not transporting drugs or you are not transporting any illegal materials, then it would not be lawful. What is the capacity to contract? It defines the ability to form contracts, attained specified age, being of sound mind, and not be disqualified from entering into a contract on the basis of any law. Which means that if there are certain criminal cases or if there are other conditions under which you are not eligible to sign a or you are disqualified from signing a contract, then you cannot be a party to the contract. Or if you are not of the required age or there is a mental health problem. Competent to contract. To make a contract, only certain people are eligible. They are those with a sound mind, people who have crossed the majority age, those who can contract because they are qualified under the contracting law. What does this mean? On people with those who with a sound mind, which means they are mentally healthy and there is no health issues with them, mental health issues with them. They have crossed the majority age. We know minors cannot sign contracts. Those who contract because they are qualified under the contracting law. There are certain other conditions under contracting law which debar people because of certain conditions. So if you are not under any of those conditions, you are qualified under the contract law. Minors in India, minors under age 18 cannot form valid contracts, and such contracts are void from the start. They cannot be sued, which means that even if somebody signs a contract when he's under 18, the law cannot do anything, nor is there any provision for you to sue him. But the contract is void. Effects of a minor agreement. A minor misrepresenting their age is not liable. If they buy property falsely, it must be returned, but they can't be sued if sold. This is very clear. A minor misrepresenting their age is not liable to be punished. that is what they say, is not liable. If they buy property falsely, it must be returned. But if the property has been sold further, then they cannot be sued for that sale. Contracts beneficial to minors. Minors can enter contracts where they are the beneficiaries, such as purchasing immovable property and suing for possession upon payment. What does this mean? That minors can enter contracts where they are the beneficiaries, such as purchasing immovable property. That means you can buy land or a house or any other immovable property and suing for possession upon payment. Once payment is made, the person, the minor, although he is a minor, but he is party to the contract where he is the beneficiary, he can sue for possession if the possession is still not transferred to him after payment. Claim for necessaries applied to minors. Minors can be held liable for reimbursing the supplier of necessaries, though necessaries are not defined. Minors can be held liable for reimbursing the supplier of necessaries, which means that let us say if the minor, although necessaries is not defined by law, what could necessaries be? For example, let us say if he requires somebody to actually guide him in terms of signing the contract or deciding the property or whatever other purchasing that he is doing. Now, he has promised that if you guide me and help me with this contract, and if I get this deal done, which means if that property becomes mine, I am going to pay you something as a compensation. In this situation, once he has made that promise for his own benefit, the minor can be liable. That means can be liable for punishment for reimbursing the supplier of necessaries. Agents. Minors can act as agents but are not liable to the principal. Minors can act as agents but are not liable to the principal, which means that it is more or less a one-sided agreement or an agency agreement that is in force. The minor can act as agents. That means they can go and, let's say, a brokerage firm. Somebody who is doing his studies is also acting as an agent. He is not liable to the principal. That means that the principal who owns the flat or the apartment cannot sue him or cannot punish him in case if a deal goes bad. Negotiable instrument. A minor can handle negotiable instruments and benefit from partnerships or shares, but cannot be a partner and their guardian's name appears in shareholding, which means that while a minor can handle negotiable instruments and benefit from partnerships or shares, but cannot be a partner, that means his name cannot appear as a partner. It will be the guardian's name whose name appears in the shareholding and as a partner. Who cannot be a party to a contract? People of unsound mind, unable to understand contracts, making them void, which means that people who are of unsound mind cannot be party to a contract. Intoxication. Lack of mental clarity prevents valid contracts. If a person is seen to be under medical treatment or has a problem with intoxication, where his mental clarity is preventing him from understanding the contract, cannot be a party to a contract. Person who is disqualified by law. If law does not accept any person, then he cannot enter into a contract. If for whatever reason there is a case that is going on, or if he has been found guilty in some forgery or some fraud, then he will not be permitted to, as an example, he may not be permitted to sign a contract. Alien enemies. Foreign citizens lose contract capacity during wartime between their country and India. Contracts made before war are suspended. What this means is that let's say you are into a contract for exporting to a certain country. Now, for whatever reasons, there is an outbreak of war and that country becomes the other party against India. In that situation, the contract that has been signed will be suspended. And once the war is over, both the parties will have to sit and sort out the issues. Convicts serving sentence. Individuals serving a sentence lack contract capacity. Definitely, criminals cannot be, who are already going through a sentence, lack the contract capacity. Married women cannot contract regarding her husband's property. A married woman cannot contract regarding her husband's property unless she is a joint holder in that property. But even if she is a joint holder, it is only her percentage of the property that she can sign for. Insolvent can enter contracts except for dealing with property, which means that people who are insolvent, that is, who are bankrupt, who do not have the financial terms, financial means, can enter contracts except for dealing with property, which means any exchange of money that is going to happen. Pardanshin women lack capacity due to undue influence and limited understanding of contract implications. People who use a veil or a parda cannot be considered parties to a contract because of the, of course, the identity and the other influence. Judges, legal practitioners, officers cannot contract if they have business interests in the actionable act claims, which means that an officer from a certain establishment cannot sign a contract for that establishment or cannot be part of a contract, which means he cannot be a beneficiary or sign a contract with the same company again in his employment capacity. Persons with limited contract capacity. Corporation or a company limited to contracts within the power specified in the Memorandum of Association or Special Act. Every company, there is a memorandum of an association, which means that it specifies who all have the power and who all can sign those contracts for future. Or there could be a certain agreement or a certain addition that is made, giving certain people authority and removing certain people from that authority. Patent office officers, employees cannot acquire rights or interests in patents during their appointment. So if they are serving the office, they cannot be a party to any patents that are being pursued. Foreign sovereigns, ambassadors, protected by diplomatic immunity, cannot be enforced under Indian law. Anybody who is an ambassador or works at an embassy and is not of Indian origin are protected by diplomatic immunity, and we cannot enforce them under Indian law, which would mean that they cannot be a party to a contract. Free consent. It is when two or more persons agree upon the same thing and in the same sense. What does this mean? That both peoples mutually agree to the same thing and they both know each other, both understand each other, and both understand the terms and conditions of that contract. That is free consent. There is absolutely no pressure here from either side or any other external body or on either of the persons or parties to sign the contract. That consent is considered free consent when it is not caused or affected by the following: coercion, that means somebody is forcing you; undue influence, you are being influenced by certain terms, conditions, certain additional offers being made which are under the table; fraud, that means that there is, you are intending to cheat and hence wanting to sign the contract, or you realize that there is something that is not wrong, not right here, but you would still like to keep quiet and go ahead with the signing. Misrepresentation, you are actually not eligible to sign that, but you represent yourself to be the right person and go ahead and want to sign it, and you sign it by mistake, which means that you are not aware of the terms, conditions, and by mistake you are getting into signing it. So what are they saying? That consent is considered free consent when it is not caused or affected by any of the following. That was those conditions are not met, then it is considered as free consent. Coercion, let us see what it means. Coercion means using force to compel a person to enter into a contract. Section 15 describes coercion as committing or threatening to commit any act forbidden by law under the IPC, unlawfully detaining or threatening to detain property, to force someone into a contract. Many a times we see in movies and in other things that there are people who kidnap somebody or put a gun to somebody and tell him, please sign this or your life is at stake. Now, these are conditions which are not acceptable. That this means coercion. Or unlawfully detaining or threatening to detain property to force someone into a contract, which means that you hold him, if he has two properties and you are wanting to purchase one forcefully, you tell him that I have the documents for both the properties, so unless you sign for one, I will not release the other. Undue influence. Undue influence occurs when one party uses their dominant position to gain an unfair advantage over the other. You can influence, let us say, somebody in his decision making. So you tell him that please do this or don't do this by your sheer power over him, your control over him. Fraud involves deceiving someone into an agreement by false statements, concealment of facts or unfulfilled promises. Damages are required and the false statement must be a fact, not an opinion. Let's say you hide your condition of being insolvent and want to buy property. Then you are deceiving and making false statements to become party to the under free consent. That would mean that under section 17 you are creating fraud. Misrepresentation occurs when a party makes a false statement, believing it to be true without intent to deceive, which means that you are not aware of certain facts and you go ahead without verifying whatever is being told to you. That would mean misrepresentation occurs when a party makes a false statement, believing it to be true. You believe it to be true because the person who is making that statement, you have not had a very bad experience or you have not had a wrong experience with that person. So you believe whatever he says is true. But what would be your requirement? You should actually you are required to check those facts before you make the statement ahead. But then you are making it without intent to deceive. Mistake of law and mistake of fact. A mistake occur whether of law or fact is an erroneous belief that impairs free consent and causes misunderstanding between the parties. What are we trying to understand here? Mistake of law and mistake of fact. A mistake of law, whether of law or fact, which means that you know certain truth about the entire contract, and now there is a mistake that you interpret or you do not understand, but you think it to be something different from what it actually is. Or you have understood the law to be different when it actually means something else. Or is an erroneous belief that impairs free consent, which means that it is not free consent. You are not aware of certain things or you are not aware of the actual meaning of certain things. And this causes misunderstanding between the parties. So you raise up a question or you raise up a point saying that no, this is what I understood when I signed the contract, then it would mean mistake of law and mistake of fact. Let's understand mistake further. The law recognizes two types of mistakes. Mistake of law, ignorance of law, Indian or foreign, is not an excuse. So just because you do not know what the actual law means or what is the law, that cannot be an excuse. That would mean it is mistake of law. Mistake of fact occurs when both parties misunderstand essential facts, which can be unilateral or bilateral. For example, that the conditions for the business earlier were different, now they are different because of certain financial issues or whatever are the other problems that either of the parties are facing. Now, what does this mean? A miss occurs when both parties misunderstand essential facts. You came to know certain you are trying to sign a deal with some other company as an agency or some technology transfer, but you realize something different from, you have misunderstood certain facts about that company, and that company also has misunderstood certain things about you. Then it's a, this could be either unilateral, either only you don't know or they don't know or both of you don't know. This could be unilateral or bilateral. This is a mistake of fact. Mistake and misrepresentation. Unilateral mistake, when one party is mistaken. Under section 222 states the contract is not automatically void or voidable, though under certain conditions it may be. This means that the mistake is only from your side. So the contract is not automatically void or voidable, though in certain conditions, yes, it could be. Misrepresentation, a false statement of a material fact made by one party that affects the other's decision to enter the contract. If identified, the contract may be void and the affected party can seek damages. Let's take an example to understand this. A false statement of a material fact made by one party. Let's say I am one party and there is another party against whom, with whom I am wanting to sign a contract. Now, what happens here is I make a statement saying that I have just acquired so and so additional property. Now, the other party understands what kind of property that is, and it is so big, then that means I am financially, it accepts and understands that I am financially well off and I can, if they can definitely go ahead and sign this contract. So they sign that contract because of the false statement that I have made about some material facts. Now, if they realize at a later point of time that I, whatever statement I made was false and I really don't have that property or I'm not even anywhere close to acquiring that property, the contract may be void. And that company or that party, the affected party, can seek damages from me. Misrepresentation. Misrepresentation, giving inaccurate information before a contract that induces the other party to agree. So, this example which I just told you, I can misrepresent my position or I give them wrong information about myself, about my property, about my holdings, and that induces the other party to agree. Unwarranted statements. A statement made without a reasonable basis, even if believed true, is misrepresentation. I make a statement that I have just signed 5 deals, 10 deals of so many millions of rupees. A statement made without a reasonable basis, even if believed true, for whatever reason, is a misrepresentation. Breach of duty. Failing to act with reasonable care leading to foreseeable harm. Breach of duty means that you know that you need to be cautious and with reasonable care, you need to proceed ahead with signing a contract because you see that if I am not careful, there is likely to be harm to me. Now, this would mean a breach of duty. Misrepresentation. Types of misrepresentation. Fraudulent. False statement made with reckless disregard for the truth. Negligent. False statement made without reasonable grounds for believing it to be true. Innocent. False statement made without fault or intent to deceive. Now let's look at each of them. Fraudulent, false statement made with reckless disregard for the truth. That means that you make the false statement even when you know that it is not true. False statement made without reasonable grounds for believing it to be true. Now negligent here would mean that there are no reasonable grounds or reasonable reason for believing it to be true, but you still go ahead and make the statement. Innocent, false statement made without fault or intent to deceive, which means that you are not really aware of the truth or you believe the statement that is made to you or the information that you have is absolutely true. What are the remedies for misrepresentation? Rescind. The contract can be rescinded returning parties to their pre-contract position, which means that the contract becomes invalid at that point of time that the misrepresentation is detected or known, and all the parties of the contract go back to their pre-contract position. Insist on performance. The aggrieved party can demand performance as initially agreed, which means that if the opposite party has defaulted because of misrepresentation and I am the other part who is the aggrieved party, the affected party, I can demand performance from them as per the contract that was initially agreed. Limitations. A contract may include conditions that limit remedies for misrepresentation claims, which means that if there are already limited, a contract has some conditions that say that if misrepresentation happens and certain things would happen or certain remedy would is defined, then only that remedy can be applicable. Representation of state of mind. A representation is a statement, either express or implied, made by one party to the other before or during the contract, influencing the decision to proceed. Which means that I make certain statements, as a result of which I also imply certain things which are made by one party, that is made by me to the other party, or during the, either before the contract is signed or during the contract, which means it is running. I am trying to impress upon the other party and trying to influence them that we should go in for another decision, or maybe put in some more funds or some funding for the current, under the current contract, then I am influencing the decision to proceed. This becomes a representation of state of mind. Inducing mistakes about subject matter. Misrepresentation occurs when one party unintentionally causes the other to mistake the subject matter of the contract, leading to mutual or unilateral mistakes. Let's say you have signed a contract for certain activity to be done or certain project to be completed. Now what happens? Misrepresentation occurs when one party unintentionally causes the other to mistake the subject matter of the contract. That means I unintentionally cause the other party, that is you, to make some mistakes about the subject matter of the contract or the project that we are talking about, which would lead to mutual or unilateral mistakes, which would lead to mistakes from either your side or for both of us. If something like this happens, it means inducing mistakes about subject matter. Fraud. Fraud involves intentionally misrepresenting or concealing a fact with the intent to deceive. If proven, the affected party can void the contract and seek legal remedies. Fraud involves intentionally misrepresenting or concealing a fact with the intent to deceive. Now here, the reason for me either making certain statements or not making or not letting the truth be known is an intent to deceive. If proven, the affected party can void the contract and seek legal remedies. Whoever is the affected party can void the contract and seek legal remedy. Acts constituting fraud. False statement of fact, section 17, subclause 1. A false statement made by someone who does not believe it to be true constitutes fraud. Mere opinions are not sufficient. That means somebody else makes either of the parties makes a false statement, but they do not believe it to be true, constitute fraud. I make a statement and I myself don't believe it to be true, then it is definitely a fraud. My opinion is not sufficient. I should believe that it is not true, and I should make the statement also. Active concealment. Concealing a fact by someone who knows the truth constitutes fraud. Either of the parties knows that there is a fact which is not very congenial or not very good or may go against them, but they conceal that fact. promise made without intention to perform. Making a promise without the intent to fulfill it is considered fraud. For example, I make a statement, make a promise saying that I will give you 1 crore rupees just for doing XYZ. I really don't intend to fulfill it. That can be considered as fraud. Any other act to deceive includes any act not covered by the previous clauses but intended to deceive, which means that if I can think of something else which is not already covered under the previous sections, subclauses, then also it could, but my intention is to deceive. Now, if my intention is to deceive, whatever statements I make can be considered under section 17, subclause 4. Declared fraudulent by law. Failure to perform legally required duties is deemed fraud. Wrong intention. Fraud requires intentional deception. Without intent, there is no fraud. Failure to perform legally required duties is deemed fraud, which means that I am supposed to deliver certain goods at certain time and there is a failure for me to perform legally, which means that I do not do that, but I give it in some other ways, means, and try to cover up or whatever else. I just go absconding. I have been paid, but I am missing, not to be contacted, or then it could be deemed as fraud. Wrong intention. Fraud occurs intentional deception, requires intentional deception without intent, that there is no cause, no fraud, which means that if my intent is to deceive, that means I really don't want to deliver those goods, then I have intent. Unless there is intent, there is no fraud. So if I have that intent, then definitely it is fraud. Mere silence. Passive concealment is not fraud unless there is a duty to speak or silence itself conveys a misleading message. Many a times we know something is not right, but we don't want to speak about it, or we just keep silence. Now, when you don't want to speak about it, which means, but you are supposed to, as per the requirement of the contract, you are supposed to say what that it is not right, but you choose to keep secret, to keep silence, then also it is considered passive concealment. Or you just just keep silence when somebody asks you questions that would mislead that message or mislead him or her to understand differently. Exceptions. When there's a duty to disclose facts, especially in contracts based on abhorrence, fides, utmost good faith, where non-disclosure is considered fraud, which means that you must disclose facts, but you decide not to do so, then there is a fraud. Half-truths are fraud, as they create false impression. You may talk about only one thing happening without saying what was the final outcome. Now, this would create a different impression on the other party, and they could get affected. In some cases, silence is treated as equivalent to speech and constitutes fraud. You know, everybody knows that you are aware of certain things, but you keep silence. In such a situation where you are required, where you are required to speak up, and you know the facts, but you still continue to keep silent and do not expose those facts or do not bring those facts out, then it can be considered as fraud. Fraud versus misrepresentation, both involve false statements, but fraud is intentional, while misrepresentation can be innocent or negligent. Fraud allows rescission and damages. Misrepresentation may only allow rescission and limited compensation. Sorry. What this means is both involve false statements, but fraud is intentional. Definitely, you are wanting to cheat and wanting to keep facts away to influence the other party's decisions, while misrepresentation can be innocent or negligent. Fraud allows rescission and damages under fraud, the aggrieved party can claim damages. Misrepresentation may only allow rescission and limited the compensation, which means that in both the cases we saw, rescission is allowed. That means that the contract can be rescinded, but under misrepresentation, the compensation is very limited.